Thanks, everyone. This will be brief. As you are able to see from the discussion we just had, each of the teams took the exercise a little bit differently. So that meant that sort of absolute reconciliation wasn't practical. But instead, there were definitely some commonalities and trends that sort of arose from it. So starting from something Sebastian said that came out of our group that Bruce talked about quite a bit is that there are already some established processes for dealing with the GAC, for dealing with the CCNSO, for dealing with the GNSO. And so a good starting point to for this might be to simply treat a consensus-based objection similar to a GAC disagreement with the board, so because that already kicks in a process. So if you've reached the threshold of consensus among the community, as opposed to an individual request for reconsideration, but it's a community-wide, and it's reached some threshold for consensus, then that community objection would be treated similar to a GAC disagreement and go through that same process of meeting, having a dialogue, and then eventually going through slowly escalating through a mediation process, and only then when the mediation process in fact fails, going to some sort of an arbitrative process at the end. And so that seemed to be a consensus of all the groups, is that a consensus should raise the standing of the objection such that the board is required to engage similarly to the way that they do now with the GAC. And as Alan mentioned, I think there's also some agreement that of the five powers that the community has requested, whether it has to do with bylaws, the budget, et cetera, that they might have slightly different thresholds and they might have slightly different processes, but what they would have in common is the need to have a dialogue initially to move then to mediation and then to an arbitrative process. So that seemed to be the commonality, but tweaking out what the subtle differences between the five powers might be in terms of that process is work yet to be done. Does that make sense? Are there questions about that? Excellent.
Thank you. Come on. Thank you very much. Well, at a minute early, over to you, sir.
Excellent. Thank you so much, and thanks again for your commitment to trying to find innovative solutions to the problems in front of us. So I think this was very helpful. We will have the sub-teams continuing to discuss this and come up with proposals that would then be the basis for further fleshing out, so that hopefully we can use that for escalation paths to factor that into the processes. So thanks very much for that. I think these two breakout sessions have been very fruitful, and we will surely build on that in our way towards consensus. This next topic is stress tests. So we're going to discuss a few stress tests, and we leave the one that some of you are waiting for most eagerly until last. So over to Cheryl and Stephen.
Thank you very much. Well, it's here, finally. We do, in fact, only have a very short period of time to begin our discussion on this matter, but it's essential that we do, in this face-to-face opportunity, take time to listen to each other and to help gain some shared understandings. We did have a particular formula that we were planning to do for all of the sections that, to deal with in terms of public comment. And so what Steve's put together for us on behalf of the rest of the team is based on the public comment tool. And so what we will be looking at is those stress tests that were responded to, inclusive of number 18. But we'll start with the simpler ones first, and you won't get to 18 until last. So don't take too long on the first one. Over to you.
Thank you, Cheryl. Steve Del Bianco with the CSG and the stress test work team. The stress tests are in Section 10 of our document with pages 83 to 119. It's an area that nobody just reads but refers to at the right time. So I'm going to refer you to four little blocks of stress tests. Between the first and second draft from CCWG, we added 10 stress tests. Those were done in direct requests from public comment, from the board in legal letter, and then NTIA, Secretary Strickling's, June 16th statement, which asked for four explicit stress tests. In the public comment tool, which many of you have seen, staff prepare, there's a tab in that Excel sheet called stress tests. And on that tab, there are 20 comments that show up. The comments, most of them focused on, are in four groups. The first was that we have several stress tests, numbers 12 and 13, and then NTIA's 33 through 35, that had to do with capture and unintended consequences of changes, barriers to entry for new parties who want to get involved in ICANN. I think we did a decent job of addressing those, but a number of the public comments said we need to dig deeper on that, that it wasn't sufficient to say that proposed mechanisms are sufficient to address capture, that we needed to explore it some more. One took issue with the question of whether an IRP would be sufficient to try to challenge an ACRSO that had done capture, since the only thing you can challenge with an IRP is an action or inaction of the corporation. So that probably would be your SO. So I think there's some great comments on how we have to tighten up our language on capture and barriers. That was 12, 13, 33 through 35. The second category is 21. In stress test 21, it was added very early on to address the revocation and reassignment of the manager for a CCTLD. It's on page 94 of the document. Now, from an early date, probably judging from the Istanbul meeting, we did not propose a specific review and redress mechanism to address stress test 21. And that was done at the request, a written request from the chairs of CWG stewardship in conjunction with CCNSO leadership, who suggested that they would be working on policy development, which is what CCNSO does, and it would be done pursuant to the framework of interpretation. So we made the conclusion at the bottom of 21, which Hillary was kind enough to put up on the screen, we concluded that neither the existing or proposed CCWG mechanisms adequately address the scenario, and we note that CCNSO is developing policy. The government of New Zealand, and I think one other, suggested that IRP should be available to address the scenario. And other comments that called out the fact that we didn't address 21, I'm letting you know we probably aren't going to do anything with that except to explain why it is we are not addressing 21. So it wasn't an omission that was accidental. It was a deliberate, and we'll try to be clear about it. So we're not addressing 21 because the parties involved asked us not to address it. Okay? Let me turn to 29 and 30. Those are on pages 112 and 113. There were seven commenters in the public comment who suggested and took objection to 29 and 30. And threshold objection was, shouldn't have them in there. Why are these even there? Other objections went to the fact that they didn't agree with how we analyzed 29 and 30. So let me be clear, 29 or 30 are there because during the first public comment period, David Post and Danielle Kale of the New America Foundation specifically asked for them. They wrote up the stress test scenarios, both in terms of the scenario and consequence, and then it fell to our work team to analyze whether the current or proposed mechanisms would be adequate to hold ICANN accountable for the scenarios, accountable for the actions taken under the scenarios. So we are happy to have a debate about whether we properly interpreted the use of an IRP to challenge contract enforcement. In fact, we talked about that for the better part of a half an hour yesterday with Becky. And that's going to be an ongoing conversation. James Bladell with the registrars is sending his thoughts on that. So frankly, the stress test work team did what it is we proposed to do. We added stress tests pursuant to public comments that asked for them. We did our best to analyze it. So happy to have debates on how to analyze them better. We won't do that in this session. I'm letting you know that there's a lot of attention on those because they highlight this clash between ICANN's enforcement of contracts and potentially a limited public mission, core value mission statement, and other core values, say, bottom-up policy development. And there are policies that we're enforcing in contracts that weren't developed through bottom-up. So I think we're going to be able to work this out. Becky seems confident that we can. And when we do, these stress tests would have to be updated. So I do think, as I said yesterday, the stress tests were successful at calling attention on the need to clarify that item. All right, and finally, let me turn to stress test 18. You'll find it on page 85. And Hillary, if you scroll to 18, I'd appreciate it. Thank you. And before I start off, I think Thomas wanted to kick in.
Yes, thanks very much, Steve. And again, thanks to the Stress Test Working Party for its excellent work. I mean, this has really been fantastic. And if you look at the GAO report, it specifically points out the work of the stress test team as an excellent part of our proposal. Before we discuss the substance of Stress Test 18, I would like to go on record with a few explanations, because Stress Test 18 has caused discussions that we did not anticipate. And this was, let's say, one of the unintended consequences of our report. And I apologize for what this has caused. But at no point in time was there a specific suspicion from the community that the governments could take over, control, or capture ICANN. At the same time, there was no suspicion that with respect to specific countries on limitations of free speech or the openness of the Internet. So let's just make that very clear. We wanted to flesh out scenarios that would impose threats to ICANN and the multi-stakeholder model. And these were the best faith or good faith intentions efforts to address those points. So as I turn over to Steve, I think he will explain a little bit more about that, the genesis of the stress test 18 language, and how we can hopefully help reconciling the differences on that.
Thanks, Thomas, and look forward to the discussion. It was frankly within a few weeks of NTIA's announcement of the transition that I whipped together the first set of stress tests as a way to channel some of the fear, uncertainty, and doubt about the transition and channel them into specific ways that the community could guard against the problems that people were bringing up. Stress test 18 came to me because I had an awareness that certain members of the GAC would have preferred a voting method somewhat different than the one they were using right now, and operating principle 47. That's no secret. Some governments have said they'd like to switch. And the GAC is perfectly free to do that. I understand how difficult it must be to have to make decisions in the absence of an objection. And I get that and have no intention of getting in the way of that. However, it did highlight the need to check and see what would be the implications if the GAC were to change its voting method. And it led me right away to the part of our bylaws where we require the board to try and find a mutually acceptable solution. That's a unique obligation that only comes to GAC advice. And I noted that it didn't say anything about the level of consensus necessary for that GAC advice, so that a future change that deviates from today, deviates from the status quo, could retain the obligation to find a mutually acceptable solution, even though the nature of the advice that came over could be completely different if it were not supported by consensus anymore. So that doesn't interfere in any way. But here's where I completely blew it. If you look at the second paragraph on the screen, paragraph 611, when I wrote up that under their bylaws, they have to consider respond to GAC advice, even if it's advice not supported by consensus. And then I added the words, a majority of governments could thereby approve GAC advice that restricted free expression, comma, for example. And I have since learned that example was a terrible example. It had no basis in belief. It had no basis in experience. It was rhetorical, and it was uncalled for, and I'm sorry. So suffice to say that once we learned that that was the source of some irritation with stress test 18, we're going to take that line out. And only sort of I've come to appreciate that more recently. I had originally thought that there was simply a misunderstanding of stress test 18. This notion that it interferes with GAC decision-making is, to me, just a misunderstanding, and all I have to do is to clarify. If you talk long enough to people, they understand it doesn't change anything about the way GAC does what it does. GAC can make decisions on any basis whatsoever. This only affects ICANN's obligation to try and find a mutually acceptable solution to say that that occurs when the GAC advice is just like it is today, which is based on consensus. Okay? So having said that, I'll quickly categorize. There were 36 comments listed in the GAC tab and 20 in the stress test tab, and I looked at all 56 of those and found that 16 comments were explicitly in favor of the bylaws change for stress test 18. So if you scroll, Hillary, to the bylaws change, it's the bold text right there. See the bold text in paragraph 619? That's the bylaws change. So people say they want to talk about stress test 18. Here, silly me, I thought we were always talking about the bylaws change. Some people were worried about the rhetoric that was used to set it up as an example, so I get that. But the bylaws change itself, with respect to supporting that, 16 explicitly favored it, including some governments, and 4 governments in particular were explicitly opposed to this bylaws change. And that doesn't count NTIA, who considers stress test 18 a requirement for the transition. They chose not to submit a comment, but I note that for the record. So that's a significant majority in support of stress test 18. So let's have a conversation about how to make it more understandable, more palatable, or, well, let's understand the degree of concern over stress test 18. So, Thomas, I'd leave it to you to conduct a cue.
Thanks very much, Steve. And, again, we very much appreciate your openness and how this stress test was crafted. So let's move to the queue. I see Jordan being first. Is that in your hand? Okay.
Just a procedural question. Are we allowed to only talk about stress test 18 now? So I just wanted to mention the CCTLD appeals that the New Zealand government mentioned. The point there was that at the moment there's some restraint to the IANA functions contract for rogue redelegations. I know that's the wrong word, but I'll use it for now. And when the CCNSO has developed a policy that will apply to appeals, there'll be protection through that policy. What we were concerned about in New Zealand was the gap in between. We didn't want there to be a situation or a time when the ICANN board could make a redelegation decision that wasn't appealable with no external restraint to stop them doing it. We thought that would be bad for CCTLD. It isn't an idea that we've fleshed out. The CCNSO knows that it needs to do a PDP on this. But if there's some way to reduce that anxiety as part of the work, I don't know what that is. One thing we floated was a moratorium on any redelegation. CNS is threatened. That's one point. I'm going to break the rules and make 2 points. On stress test 18, I made some comments yesterday that might have left people thinking I don't support it. I do support it. This is a natural bylaws change that should be put there that has no impact on GAC decision-making or advice. And the NTIA could not have been clearer that they regard this as a fundamental underpinning. If we don't put this in, we're guaranteeing that the transition proposal will not be approved. That is not our job. Our job is to help with the transition, not to stop it. This bylaws change wouldn't restrict anyone or anything. I think it's essential that we put it in. If that means that one of the supporting organizations that's a chartering organization, this group, can't express support for our report, that might be a price we have to pay. Thanks.
Jordan, my hope is we don't have to pay that price, but thank you for that. And Jordan, you did mention the stress test 21. It would be challenging for CCWG to propose a moratorium on redels or to propose an IRP, which is what New Zealand had asked for the government. I don't know how an IRP would work because of the, I don't know what bylaw I'd be looking at as a standard of review. But I would invite you to work with your colleagues in the New Zealand government. If there's something we can add to our next draft report that addresses the gap period, we would love to add that to the report while at the same time being respectful of the fact that the CWG stewardship asked us don't try to solve for this issue. Thank you.
Next in the queue is Greg.
Thanks, Greg Chatton. First, I'll say I support stress test 18 as well, but I'm not asking about it. My point was about stress tests 29 and 30. I was a bit surprised to learn only recently that not only were was the stress test, the first box, taken verbatim from those contributed, but also the consequences were taken verbatim. I suggest that that's not an appropriate method or something that we should correct because the consequences really reflect our analysis of the factual scenario. And I disagree strongly with the with the consequences that are there. But just as a purely matter of process, taking the commenter's consequence and adopting it is troublesome. In this case, particularly, as Steve said, we will be using the stress test section as a frame of reference. And these stress tests, if they're left in, would directly influence how certain new bylaws changes would be or could be interpreted. This is part of our legislative history, so to speak. And if it stands the way it is, I think we end up with an interpretation that, again, I would strongly object to. So we really need to, if we don't scrap these, need to examine them carefully. I would also note that stress test 29 really has two totally different tests in paragraphs 936 and 937, and if this is kept, they should be split out. Just trying to answer them, kill two birds with one stone, just ends up with a muddy mess. So I think we just need to, and this may be true of some of the other commenters' stress tests, we need to look at the consequences as part of our work. We should be looking at factual scenarios, whatever they are, not shy away from any of them, but we have to analyze them carefully and understand how they will be used by the public in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. Right on time. I will note that paragraphs that really matter are 942, 43, and 44, where we analyze it. None of those paragraphs relied upon the consequence stipulated by Post and Kale. But I fully support your admonition that the consequence shouldn't be taken verbatim from requester, that the stress test team should own that and feel it is as if it is appropriately reflects a potential plausible consequence arising from the scenario in the first paragraph. So, Greg, I would look to you to help me out with more specifics. I will reread the IPC's comment. As I said before, there were seven commenters who objected in varying degrees of detail. So I would look for you to give me more detail for our next draft.
Always happy to pitch in.
Thanks very much, Greg and Steve. Kusai?
Thank you. First, let me thank Steve for his initial comment on paragraph 611. This is a constructive comment, and it is valued on our behalf. My concern with stress test 18 specifically, that it somehow interfered in the way or mean how the GAC is reaching to its advice or recommendation. It's like a message to the GAC. If it's not by consensus, then your recommendation is not valued that much. We should respect how a member of the community in the ICANN makes its recommendation, whether it's by consensus or by another means. Although currently today, the GAC overwhelmingly believe that consensus is the best way for us to reach for its recommendation. And I don't see the possibility of that process to change, not even the near future or mid. But it does create a precedence where we are mentioning in a bylaw how a member of the community valued based on the process of his recommendation, based on the process of how he took the how he made that recommendation. And here we are not equally treated like others. While we are respecting the other SOs and ACs and how they are making their recommendations or decisions or positions, as it is, we should apply this also to the GAC. So, if we are mentioning by consensus in a bylaw, that means one day possibly we'll mention in the bylaw for other organizations how they will reach their recommendations. So, this may be a precedence that may not help. Thank you.
Thank you, Kazai. And I'm glad that you gave some recognition to the apology, and I meant it heartfelt. With respect to singling out the GAC, I'm a part of GNSO, and it might surprise you to learn that for a decade, the bylaws of ICANN require that when the board acts on GNSO policy, it requires GNSO supermajority. The word supermajority next to GNSO is in the bylaws 22 times. It's reserved for GNSO thus far, And it was done because of a recognition that in the GNSO we are often a divided community. So the bylaws reflect the board's obligation to implement, conditional upon it having been a supermajority. And for that reason, I guess we call the GNSO's consensus level happens to be supermajority and as defined in the bylaws. And it goes right down to defining the percentages for that too. So there is a precedent already, but I take your point that if GNSO and the GAC have thresholds attached to the board's obligation to follow the advice, why don't we have a similar threshold, say, for ALAC advice or SAC or RSAC? And I think it's absolutely a fair question. And yet, in this case, we are dealing with a bylaw that already has an obligation, which is why we felt it necessary to attach a qualifier, the word consent, to that obligation. There's no attempt here to dictate the specific consensus role. It doesn't say supermajority. It doesn't say unanimity. It doesn't say the absence of an objection. It's meant to provide some flexibility there.
Thanks very much. Next in line is Olga.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. And thanks, Steve, for the presentation and for the apology. We'll take him. I would like to make two or three comments. The first is that there are not four countries against stress test 18. It's 12, and I will add to the list my dear friend QSI, so it's 13. The GAC is discussing that internally, so I cannot disclose the names, but I cannot tell you the number. So the number is increasing, and that may change in the near future. You mentioned that this amendment in the bylaw, it's a requirement from the NTIA for the transition. We haven't seen that from the beginning. If this was a requirement, we should have known. And honestly, I haven't seen as a requirement from the beginning. So in Argentina, we believe that it's not a requirement, and it's a text that we may have a different opinion about. I think that yesterday afternoon and today I heard from several colleagues that there is a general agreement that each SO and SC should find their own way or methodology for making decisions. So why is this change in the bylaws required only for the GAC? The GAC would be able to, I agree with QSI that it would be difficult in the near future to change the way we operate, but that's up to the GAC. So we don't find a reason for this amendment in the bylaws. And finally, Steve, when you say we find it necessary, would you clarify to me who is we? Thank you.
Thank you, Olga. And when we reflected four countries, that's just a reflection of how many submitted public comments by the September 12th deadline. And thank you for letting us know that there's another nine who have as you say, registered on the private GAC list, so I wouldn't have any visibility of that. I'm anxious to learn about their concerns, and if any of you are here today, please speak up. Please speak up. I wanted to address your question about NTIA stating that it's a requirement, and that first occurred right after the meeting in Istanbul, and the U.S. government representative to the GAC sent an email in response to Chairman Schneider. And that email stated explicitly that the bylaws change associated with stress test 18 was necessary. And I had circulated that in a document, and I can bring up that email for you. It's on the CCWG list. And then there was some probing of that when we all gathered in Paris, and you were there in Paris, and we had representative NTIA in the room who on two occasions, on 2 days, reconfirmed that they considered the bylaws change for stress test 18 necessary to meet one of the NTIA's requirements that its role not in any way be replaced by governmental or intergovernmental influence over ICANN. So they have made that clear twice. Well, first time was as early as Istanbul and then reiterated in July. And I'm sorry that we didn't do a better job circulating that more widely than we did. But whether it's a surprise or not, it's pretty clear right now, as Jordan said. So it's best for us to work from that assumption as we move forward. Your final point was about treating others the same, and Kosai and I just had that interchange that the GNSO has for a decade had its advice, its policies, gated by saying they had to be supermajority for the board to have certain obligations. Was there a final question that I've missed?
Sorry for taking the floor again. And you refer several times that we think, and who is we?
Great. Thank you very much. The way this worked is that the stress test team developed stress tests in December and January. Out of those stress tests, there were several that suggested the need for bylaws changes. One was number 14, which is the idea that the AOC could be terminated. And that suggested that suggested the bylaws change would bring the AOCs into the bylaws, if you recall. Another is stress test 18, which suggested a bylaws change. So beginning in January, the stress test team, working with Work Party 1, where Jordan's the rapporteur, drafted a section of our first document suggesting that an appropriate response to stress test 18 would be to make this one line, one sentence change to the bylaws affecting ICANN's obligation. So the we became stress test team, which was unanimous in its desire, and then it became Work Party 1, which was unanimous in its acceptance of putting those words in. And then it made it through our first set of approvals that we did for the first draft. It made it through the second draft. Although I am completely aware that your country, France, Spain, Brazil, very emphatic in their opposition to it, and there seems to be some concern that we didn't note their concerns in the report. But our second draft report, I don't believe there was any place where we would note where a small but important minority was against something. We almost always tried to draft a readable report, and we put it out for public comment for that. So there's no attempt to ignore the concerns of the four countries that we spoke of earlier. But nowhere in the report were we parenthetically noting that four individuals or four groups are opposed. So we understood that and went ahead with it. So the we is the stress test team followed by Work Party 1. I hope that answers your question.
Thanks very much. Pedro's next.
Thank you, Thomas. Thank you, Steve, for the clarifications. And also, thank you for the stress test team for the incredible work they've been doing. I want to, apart from what Olga has just stated, that it expresses our concerns, I think one of, or perhaps the central point that at least the government of Brazil sees in its objection to stress test 18, it's that we fail to understand the reason behind it. We fail to understand why the GAC advice represents a risk of capture by governments. We, of course, support that the risk of that capture by government should be avoided. By the way, risk of capture by any individual SO, we support that. But we can't understand why an advice that's nothing more than an advice, it's not an instruction, it's not an order, it's an advice, how that can represent a risk of capture, how that can turn ICANN into a government-led organization. It stands in the bylaws that, yes, the board has duly considered the advice from the GAC. It has to start a process to find a solution, but it's not obliged to find a solution. At the end of the day, if no solution can be found, the board can take a decision contrary to the GAC advice. So how can this represent a risk of capture by government? So that's, I think, the main question. Thank you.
Thank you very much. On the question of why, NTIA's directive said to avoid significant expansion of the role of governments in ICANN decision making. So we sometimes shortchange that word for capture. But let's be clear, the word was a significant expansion of government's role in ICANN decision-making. With that in mind, the stress test team and later Work Party 1 looked at an acknowledged discussion that happens in the GAC, where the GAC was considering moving away from operating principle 47. It may or may never happen. I know Kasai said he didn't think it ever would. Fine, then. We're arguing over nothing at all. If they're not going to change the decision-making methods, then there is zero effect of codifying today's status quo in the bylaws to say that when GAC consensus advice comes over. And there may be other forms of advice that come over from the GAC to ICANN that you don't consider to be consensus advice. You may end up having some majority advice and some consensus advice. And if you ask why we focus on this, the significant expansion of government influence would come if more and more government decisions would carry the obligation of trying to find a mutually acceptable solution. And the implication there is if majority voting alone were sufficient, as opposed to the absence of an objection, the nature of the advice could change materially from what it is today, because the absence of an objection causes the GAC, just like the rest of us, to have to work hard to get to a consensus position to which no one would object. If simple majority voting of some kind was allowed, we could see very different kinds of advice from the GAC, and it carries with it that very special obligation. No other community's advice carries this obligation for the board to try and find a mutually acceptable solution. That's unique. That's special about the relationship with the GAC. And we wanted to do nothing to affect that. It's still there. That obligation is still there with any of the advice that you give that is consensus-backed.
Thanks very much. Cavus is next.
Thank you, Steve. I don't understand why the statement of the director of NTIA, you said director of NTIA, with respect to the influence of the government is associated with Stress 18. Has nothing to do with that. It was arising from the way that the CCWG started to give the right to AC to participate in the voting procedure and decision making. Has nothing to do with Stress 18. Number one. Number two, you said that the representative of NTIA said that. For me, NTIA announcement is the only thing that I respect. Representative of GAC is respectful of the NTIA in the GAC, what he said, but that doesn't mean that it is a guideline for the CCWG. It remains a statement of that distinguished, respectful representative. For me, the announcement of 14th of March 2014 is count, plus five others that I don't know how NTIA add another five, become 10, which is still have some, it is not in the initial statement announcement. My question is, did the GAC advice during the last 17 years cause any problem? I'm not talking of the content. I'm talking of the substance. To the ICANN, by thinking that this may have some difficulty for the community. ICANN has some difficulty sometimes with the wording and language of the advice. I'm aware of that. But did not have any problem with the application of that. Why it came like this? We think that we should leave it to the GAC. If GAC decides that this stresses 18 has value, we accept that. If GAC decides that has harms, we reject that. If we don't have any agreement between the two, still we do not want to change anything. So we should leave it to the GAC because it is the public policy issue, a specificity of the GAC. And that should be respected. Thank you.
Thanks, Cavus. Mark is next.
Yes, thank you, Chair, and thank you to Steve for presenting on this and expressing the awkwardness of the original framing of this proposal. We appreciate very much his withdrawal and apology for that. That's, I think, very helpful. First of all, I should explain the UK was one of the governments that supports, and still is, one of the governments that supports the inclusion of Stress Test 18 and the bylaw change proposal that it makes. And we acknowledge there is opposition to this proposal in within the GAC, and there is some discussion going on. I think it was mentioned in one of the earlier interventions that the GAC is still, this is still a live issue for the GAC, and indeed there is a text proposal that, that's circulating to in an effort to enhance the bylaw change proposal. So it's pretty much a live issue. I think if we reorientate this proposal in a way that focuses on the issue and status of consensus advice rather than majoring on this as a possible response to threat of capture, I think that's more useful because I think it serves the community well and the board well to determine the circumstances in which the board has to negotiate with the GAC in order to achieve a mutually acceptable solution. And our view is that it should only happen when the advice has been submitted on a consensus basis. And as you've made clear, and others have commented too, it's for the GAC to determine how that consensus is defined, and there is indeed some discussion about how you deal with situations maybe where one or two governments are not supportive of a GAC advice proposal, and so the risk there is that there is some blockage in the process. So we're looking at that, and that's a valid concern. So I reiterate that we, the UK, support the proposal. We can't see any harm flowing from it. It basically puts into, with greater clarity, the current situation where the GAC strives to provide consensus-based advice, and in those circumstances where the board rejects that advice, there is a an obligation flowing from that. I hope those comments are helpful. Thank you. I'm sorry, I've gone way over time. Apologies.
Thanks very much. Steve, would you like to comment on that?
We anxiously await the resolution of the live issue and the new text. Very interested to see that. Appreciate it.
Thanks very much. Next is Chris.
Thank you, Thomas, and thank you, Steve. I want to come back briefly to the stress test or the issue of the CCTLDs. With all due respect to everybody concerned, I do not think that it is appropriate for New Zealand or Jordan to be putting things into the report. If there is a, what should happen is that if you believe that there is some doubt about it, you should reach out to the CCNSO and ask them again to confirm whether or not they would like you to put any interim measures into the report. Otherwise, what will happen is that something will go in and then the CCs will have to corral around it and object, and that's just not a useful way to do it. I think the way to do it is to double-check back with the CCs and see. Thanks.
Could I ask you to handle that as a CCNSO member?
Sure.
I'm very
happy
with Jordan on that.
Jordan and I can very happily do that together.
That would be so much better than having us remember to reach out to you. Thank you.
You mean you've got too much to do?
That's a good idea, Chris.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, Chris. And Steve had put up his hand, but he's not in the Adobe. So, Steve, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Chris touched on the topic that I was going to say, which is, again, in response to Jordan's suggestion about what should be put into the bylaws about restraint on redelegations. 100% support for what Chris said, that this is something that has to go back to the CCNSO. But I wanted to take a second to make it clearer sort of what the context of all of this is. The board really, really, really does not want to be in the position of making decisions about redelegations. Redelegations happen sometimes in adverse circumstances, and that puts us in a difficult position. And what we have always done from the beginning is to take a slow roll, a trailing edge position, if you will. So rather than being proactive and saying, well, we're going to make this happen, we try to bring up the rear and only when all the pieces are in place. That's an attempt at the safest possible path. It is not satisfactory in all circumstances. We have sometimes been caught in the circumstance where the de facto situation at the redelegation took place, different operators in place, and we've been informed about that. That trick that kicks off a process in which we say, oh, well, let's talk about it. Can you document this? And we get back a fairly huffy reply saying, we did this, you will follow this, and so forth. And we say, but we have our processes, and we're supposed to do this. Technically is the wrong word. It is a politically difficult thing. Individual CC operators, CCTLD operators, do not want to be subject to control by others. The relationship between governments and CCTLD operators varies all over the place. So it's hard to write a prescription that says this is the way it's going to be. First of all, I want to offer that there is a knotty problem. It's been under review for a long time. The framework of interpretation from the CCNSO was a big step further. The first thing I asked when it arrived was, does it solve this problem? Oh, no, we're going to get to that. So this is just some problem that is not going to get resolved in this kind of forum. It has to be worked out over time by the people who are involved. And I want to reemphasize that the board's position on this is to try very, very hard not to be the focal point for these things. And at the same time, we do get caught into a certain amount of political things. And I could cite one case after another. There aren't that many, but they come up every year or 2 years as something happens. So I'm very empathetic with the point that you're trying to make, Jordan. But it is it's not like you just sort of stamp this down and then you've got it under control. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Steve. And just to remind everyone that I had closed the queue after Jorge, as written in the chat, we're already in over 50 minutes overtime. Next is Brett, please.
Brett Schaefer for the record. Thank you very much. I want to first say that I support Stress Test 18. I also support the inclusion of the amended text into the bylaws. However, I think it's quite clear from what has been done here that what you're supporting is with respect to governmental advisory committee advice that is supported by consensus, you mean the current definition of consensus under Principle 47 in the GAC operating principles. And as you know, that principle can be changed by the GAC. I think to maintain that understanding of what current consensus is, you need to expand the amendment to the bylaw to include that definition under Principle 47 within that text. And I would suggest adding simply an addition to it, which is the current definition as of in the GAC operating principles, which is a decision adopted by general agreement in the absence of formal objection. Therefore, that would in no way prevent the GAC from changing its consensus principles and operating on anything else that the GAC does. But in regard to this very special privilege that they have on this bylaw area, they would have to operate under current understanding of how the GAC operates, which is obviously what we're doing. Thank you.
Thanks, Brett. Suzanne?
Thank you very much. And thank you very much, Steve, for your opening comments and your several interventions that have sort of lent greater clarity and I think have certainly helped us, the United States, and I trust some of my colleagues in the GAC. There is a very robust email exchange that is going on in the GAC. And I think this is useful for us today to kind of flesh out, first of all, your very gracious apology and proposal to amend paragraph 611. I have a slight twist and would propose that perhaps, since there seems to be general understanding that the target of Stress 18 is actually the ICANN board, vice the GAC. Would I be correct in saying that's a general understanding? So the target, if the target is in fact the board, we could consider revising paragraph 610 to indicate that the purpose here is to, in our minds at least, for the United States government, we want to memorialize the existing practice that has been in place for some time and was ratified by GAC board and community agreement on the ATRT1 recommendation. So this is actually simply confirming current practice that has been fully vetted and fully agreed. It also, we think, has the added value, and this is where I would propose that this group consider how paragraph 610 could be amended, that the intention is to protect the board from being put in a position where in the event they were forwarded less than consensus advice from the GAC, they would be put in a very awkward position of being at risk of taking action that could be contrary to some government's laws, regulations, or policies, or worse, they could be put in an extremely awkward position, my apologies, of having to write new international law. So it strikes us that there wouldn't be a board member in this room who would feel very comfortable being put in that position. So my proposal would be, and I'm happy to offer language very quickly after the meeting, the focus, the whole first paragraph 610 gets amended. Paragraph 611 is amended. And then I would agree with Brett, one of our proposals for amending the actual text of the bylaw change is, in fact, to include a reference to the UN definition of consensus, because that is, in fact, precisely what is in the operating principles. None of that means that the GAC cannot share with the board a full range of views. There are going to be those cases where there are differences. There are different laws, regulations, policies, different priorities in national governments, and there will be occasions where the GAC is not able to reach consensus. The GAC, though, nonetheless, thinks it's worthwhile to forward to the board, and all of this is public, so the community is informed as well, that there are a variety of views. Not that you can act on them the same way or are obliged to enter into negotiations to find a mutually acceptable solution, but that the board and the community should be made aware. So in our minds, Stress Test 18 was never targeted toward the GAC. It was never meant to be restrictive. It was, in fact, meant to solidify the unique role that I think the GAC plays in the community. We have always thought that was unique, and for good reasons. So I'll stop there since I've gone over time. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Suzanne. Next is Ellen.
Thank you. First, a very brief comment. The ALEC would be delighted if our advice had to be followed, including negotiations, if the board doesn't follow it. And for the record, even though our advice does not need to be followed, we would be delighted to say that any advice we give has to be subject to full agreement of the full vote of the ALEC. I thought I knew what the second half of my question was, but after Suzanne's intervention, I'm not sure I understand anymore. My reading of the change in the bylaw was that the board only had to take the special action if GAC advice was made by consensus as defined in Principle 47.
To answer you, that's not what's written on our first draft. The first draft we put out in May just said the word consensus.
No, I'm sorry. I was elaborating consensus as defined in 614, which says, according to GAC Principle 47. What I heard, Suzanne.
That's a fair read of the stress test, but Hillary, would you scroll down to the actual bylaws words, please? Thank you. The bold underlined words do not specifically reference consensus as defined in both Susan and Brett. Both Susan and Brett were recommending that these black underlined bold words get further clarified to refer to the 2014 UN principle.
That's what I was asking. If their interpretation is the intended one, then 616 is worded well. If their interpretation is not the intended one, 616 is worded exceedingly poorly. I can elaborate privately if you wish.
Thanks very much, Alan. Jorge?
Thank you, Jorge Cancio, Switzerland, for the record. Well, after this discussion, I think I'm more confused than ever, because there's no rationale to this bylaws change. if I were in law class, a professor would say this is a conclusory. You go to a conclusion, but there's no rationale. There's no premise where from you're drawing that conclusion. Because the rationale we had, and which is on para 609, is the NTIA requirement on government capture. But we have been told that this is not really the rationale for this stress test and for the conclusion we find later. And there have been now discussions, and there are ongoing discussions also within the GAC on what that rationale could be. But having a conclusion in the draft report or in the final report without an agreed rationale is quite meaningless to me. So I think that there should be a discussion on this rationale, and only if we agree on a rationale that has some relation with this conclusion, and this rationale is within the remit of the work of this CCWG, then we can look into the specific bylaw change amendment. But jumping into the having that amendment there without an agreement on the rationale would be meaningless. And I'll finish very quickly. I'm concerned that here we are seeing in the public comment support for this conclusion by some constituencies of the GNSO mainly, and we know and we are seeing an ongoing discussion in the GAC with a lot of disagreement within the governments, which would probably make it not possible to reach to an agreement to support the final report by the GAC. That would steal us or would eliminate the possibility that we have a government support in the mix of this CCWG. So I would suggest to the co-chairs that they think about a possibility of acting as neutral facilitators in this discussion within the community, because an independent and neutral facilitator, somebody who has no declared stake in this debate, would probably be needed. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Jorge. And I had closed the queue after you. We see Cavus and Thomas's hands are still up, so if you could please keep your interventions brief. Cavus is passing. Thomas?
Thank you. I tried to put my hand up several times, but somehow the connection here doesn't seem to like my computer because I keep having problems, so sorry for this. I will not comment on the substance of this, as there is no agreement in the GAC. I just have a question to Jordan. He made a remark in his intervention that I did not really fully understand, and I was just asking for clarification. You said something like, well, okay, if the GAC is not in agreement with this, we can live with that. Could you be more clear in what you meant by saying this? Thank you very much.
I didn't say that we could live with it. I was just reflecting on the submissions that had come in from some governments that they would object to GAC consensus in approving the proposal if stress test 18 was there. I understand those comments have been made. It's not my role to try and interpret them.
Thanks very much. Now, before we close the session, let me say that I was quite positively surprised by a lot of constructive proposals from board members and other community members on how the issues surrounding stress test 18 can be resolved or brought closer to resolution. Let me put it that way. Let's not be too optimistic with this. But we understand that there are conversations going on in the GAC. And my question to this group is whether, particularly to those who have proposed alternative language, amongst it, Suzanne and I think Chris also suggested some tweaks to the language, whether it would be appropriate for our group to come up with alternative language while the GAC is still in the midst of coming up with compromise language. I'm not trying to keep this additional work off our table. I'm more than happy to do it if it's helpful. But I think this is a discussion that really needs to take place in the GAC. And I'd be surprised if it could be, you know, I would be surprised if there was no risk of us interfering with that with negative impact on the outcome. So I suggest we do not start a different discussion on this. I would leave that primarily to the chairs of the stress test working party to consider and maybe reach out to those that have suggested alternative language and then get back to the full group next Tuesday with a suggested way forward. So with that, I'd like to thank the two of you and all the contributors for a very fruitful discussion on this point. So we have gone into overtime with this session, so now it's time for us to take stock. And you might take the co-chair's flexibility on time, I mean, allowing the stress test discussion more time and having less time on taking stock as we don't need much time on taking stock because there's no progress. But this is far from the truth. Those that have been frustrated in these 2 days at times will hopefully now be positively surprised because we actually have identified some areas where we can really improve and where we think we have agreement on improvement. So we will discuss that. I hope that staff is going to bring up the respective slide on that. So we're going to do this in two phases. Now, first phase is going to be that we revisit the suggested changes to community powers and other areas such as this OAC accountability enhancements. And after that, we suggest looking at the list with the three tables to see whether we have areas that we can move from the uncertainty column to broad support, if not consensus column. Before we do that, let me just respond briefly to the statement that was made by Steve earlier this afternoon, because obviously that has caused some confusion. I think it's important to recognize that the board does have a view on what we're doing. At the same time, the board has a role as the facilitator of this process. And I think there was some confusion with respect to what the board said and what the board did not intend to say with the statement. It's not for me to construe what the board's intentions were on this, but from a co-chair perspective, we will follow the process that we've agreed with you, i.e., we look at the public comments, we look at the comments and analyze them, board's comments as well as everybody else's comments. We do that as diligently as we did after the first public comment period, and we will then see what model, what suggestions get most traction, which have community consensus. That is our task, as prescribed in the charter. We are there to come up with a consensus recommendation. And it is not for me as co-chair to predict the outcome of what the consensus might be, but I'd just like to remind everyone that we're operating on the basis of that principle, and the board has passed a resolution a couple of months back on how it will deal with proposals coming from the community. So I think that the rules for both parties are quite clear. I will not speak more to that. I think it's also not an area that we should spend more time on now. So, Kavus, if you could please permit me that we moved on to the taking stock session now. Actually review the areas where we think we have advanced consensus in the group. So can we bring that up, please? So we seem to have some technical issues here. But we want everyone to be able to see the improvements. And Leon will do the magic on the technology. This is why we call him Leon Magic Sanchez. Shall we sing something in the meantime?
Magic is done.
And for those who are participating remotely, that was Zook creating a little sound sculpture for us. And again, he helped out in a moment where we needed him. So let's look at the areas of improvement. What we think we've agreed is that we would split the three powers, the budget, operating plan, strategic plan. We would put the consultation process into the bylaws, which is currently not there, to reduce the risk of friction between the board and the community, and to take on board the comment received from the board with a higher budget for the subsequent year. So after two vetoes, we would not have the budget limited to exactly the amount that it was previously, but we would extend it to 110%, not raised by 110%, so that's important. We will make very clear that the PTI budget continues no matter what happens to the ICANN budget. So do you think that this accurately reflects the discussion yesterday? So I'd like to confirm the agreement in this group. We will have two readings, right? So we can't... Cavus, yes. Your hand is conveniently up from
yes,
the previous
yes, conveniently
intervention.
Conveniently up,
so
not because of the participants, because of the ICG liaison. I don't understand the meaning that matter what happens, very clear that PTI budget continues. What does it mean continues? The CWG asks that have the power to reject that. What do you mean continues? This is not clear. So I am not convinced to message the ICG that the requirement of CWG will be met. So I think you need to modify that sentence.
Jordan, can you maybe respond to that?
We're trying to provide a very simple, high-level summary of what we thought the agreement was. This is not the language that will be used to formally communicate that. So it will continue to be funded is the point. Yeah, or to make it even clearer, whether there's an ICANN budget veto or not will have absolutely no impact on ICANN's funding of the PTI budget. That's what's intended.
Thanks very much. Cavus, you will see the complete language very shortly, but we want to agree on the principle that the PTI budget shall be preserved regardless of a veto. That was the intention. That was a request by the room yesterday to have that clarified. We're offering this clarification. And I see Brett's hand is up.
Thank you. This is actually just a question. I know that the board proposed a spending limit of 110%. Did they provide any rationale for why 110% and not 105% or 103%? Is there a historical basis on ICANN budget growth that would justify that as a reasonable or a historically relevant amount to increase or have a new budget limit?
Thanks, Brett. Are there any board members in the room who would like to respond to that? Bruce?
Yeah, look, I think we're just really trying to conceptually indicate that there may be spending costs increases in any budget. You know, your supplier costs can go up, can be inflation, etc. So really it's just saying you want to keep the same framework as the previous year's budget, but some scope for cost increase. Typically the budget runs probably with that level of contingency in it anyway, from year to year. So yeah, if you want to make it 5% or 7% or make it equal to CPI increases or pick some other number, it was just conceptually saying that picking the same fixed number as the previous year, the cost of data centres or cost of rent could go up, all sorts of costs can go up from year to year.
Thanks, Bruce. Cavus had raised his hand again, and then Jonathan. Cavus, you already spoke, so I'd like to ask
yes,
you to
Yes, I already
brief,
spoke,
please.
But the sentence should read, community rights regarding the development and consideration of the PTI budget shall be met. That is the sentence, and no any other alternatives. I'm sorry, Jordan, I cannot agree with any other alternative than what is given by CWG. This is the ICG conclusion that we cannot make any shift from this. Thank you.
So maybe we can pull the sentence from the transcript for everybody to take a look at. I have not been able to follow this.
It is in your slide.
Whatever
linkage
the language that we need
CWG,
to have.
Yeah.
Whatever the language we need to get it right, we will have to get it right because it all means the same thing.
Yeah. And I guess that, you know, maybe we can agree that the intention of what's on this slide is the same as what you're suggesting. This is not the language to be adopted. We will flesh that out and you will get an opportunity to read that. Jonathan.
I don't know if this is cross purposes what you're trying to accomplish right now, and if so, I apologize. But just to follow on Bruce's last comment about just accommodating for growth, can we assume that the board's proposal surrounding this assumes that the allocation of funds would be the same and that this that as the previous year, so that it's not just the budget isn't just about the total number, it's about how the money's being spent. So if it's last year's budget plus 10%, is that money being spent on the same things as the previous year? Does that question make sense? Is it allocated the same way?
It does.
And I just want to make sure we're on the same page about that, that's all.
The board proposal was that they would pass a budget that was up to a 10% higher spending limit. The CCWG proposal was that the previous year's budget would continue in force. I don't think we've talked that difference out at this point.
Okay. Question now is, how do we deal with this? We can certainly add to things later, but we wanted to keep things as simple as possible. So I would take the absence of further objection as agreement from the group to take these improvements to our proposal on board so that we can now move to the next slide, please. Brett?
I don't think so. I think you need to resolve the 10%, 5%, the previous budget plus inflation. That's still an outstanding issue. I agree that the budget should be, should not be frozen or cut off. But to simply assume that a 10% increase is the norm, I think is not what should be acceptable.
Brett, then obviously I have misunderstood your previous intervention. I thought you were asking a question for clarification, and I didn't take it as an objection to this.
I'm sorry, it was clarification, trying to figure out what the basis for it was and whether there was a justification for it instead of just an off-the-cuff, back-of-the-envelope estimate.
Good. Then let's just check whether there is more opposition to the 10% increase. So those who disagree with us.
May I ask one question? What is new in this sentence? What we are looking for is that the budget will be a limit increase of the budget of 10%.
Correct.
Compared to the year before.
And that we didn't have in our proposal.
Yeah, it's not in our proposal. It's what it's suggested here, but new spending limit doesn't seem exactly the same in English for my understanding of English. New may mean something really new, and that what we are looking for, it's a possible increase of 10%. But
it's not referring to additional or new expenditures in categories that have not been made before. It's a clarification that the spendings for the subsequent year are limited to a 10% increase. Rinalia?
Sorry, I just wanted to clarify one thing, not on a 10% thing, but on the split into three powers. Am I correct to interpret that you mean it's a veto on each budget, operational, operating plan and strategic plan? And if that was the intention, then I think the linkage between annual budget and annual operating plan means that it's one.
The suggestion was to separate the three powers. Shireen had made some observations on that there is a certain interlinkage, but we have different periods for the two. In terms of reaching agreement in this group, we felt that there was little to no opposition to what's in the report on the veto right for strategic plan and operating plan. So we want to separate the three powers so that we can confirm agreement from the group and only work on revisions for the budget position. Shireen?
I just wanted to bring to your attention that there are two operating plans. One which is a 5-year, which is attached to the strategic plan, and one which is an annual. And I was talking about the annual and the budget go together. And the reason is the budget is no more than a translation or costing of the operating plan. And to focus only on that, you're really only freezing a number. It doesn't give you any power. I keep on saying that it's to your advantage to think of the operating plan as well, but if you don't want, that's fine. So I'm going to keep quiet now.
That sounds a little bit disappointed, Shireen, and you shouldn't be.
Because I've repeated it so many times, but no one is listening. The community wants powers to affect the way the board behaves, the way the board spends its money, the way the board should not deviate from its mission, the way the board should not go and undertake initiatives without the approval of the community. You are not doing that by freezing a number, which is... I think it's not the place here to have this debate. I think we should have it in a small group, and I can explain that in a much better way for you, for your own interest. I really believe that. But this is not the forum to... It's going to take some time, and it needs all the people around the table to understand that.
I guess from a procedural point of view, the question for this group is and was, if we have three items in front of us and there's agreement on two, why not try to tick them off the list and say we agree on these and just work on the one that is not agreeable by the whole group? Because the 10% increase, that's not affecting the operating plan. So we're trying to get things off the list that this group agrees. That doesn't mean that when we operationalize, that the linkage is regarded as valuable, and that this is taken into account by the community when it discusses, which I hope will never be necessary, to veto the strategic plan or operating plan. But we just want to confirm consensus in as many areas as possible. So I think I would suggest we proceed as usual. I would ask whether there is more objection to separating these than from Shireen. Again, please get an indication of those that don't like to separate this. Asha and Ray? Good. Jonathan?
I guess if I can just reiterate what Shireen said, there's actually four things, not three, and that they amount to two things. There's an operating plan, the 5-year operating plan that's linked to the strategic plan, and there's an annual operating plan that's linked to the budget, and the budget's an expression of that operating plan. So those are the two paths that we actually want to separate, is the budget plus operating plan and the five-year budget plus strategic plan.
Okay, then
there's four documents, two paths, I think is what Shireen is saying.
We thought this would be quick wins, and if it's not a quick win, then it's not a quick win. So I suggest we take the separation off the table for today, and I'm tempted to ask you, Jonathan, to come up with alternative language. But no, I'm going to choose Shireen, since he was the troublemaker on this one. So Shireen, if you could come up with alternative language reflecting that, then we do another split. I think we will easily confirm this. I think that shouldn't be an issue. But then I think we can't do it today. But on the other points, I understand that that we're good to go. So we can move to the next slide, please.
I'm sorry to be pinpoint, but two vetoes of something, because two vetoes could be the veto of the budget and the veto of the ops, as it is written. And we need to be clear of what we want. It's two veto by the community of the budget, I guess.
We were referring to the budget community power, so let's correct that on the slide. Two vetoes on the budget will lead to that consequence. Good. So I think Caboose's hand is an old hand. Greg's hand. Greg, did you want to speak? Or can you maybe resist? Thanks. Let's move to the next slide, please. That's the removal of the individual directors. So we understood that the group is okay with individual board member removal in case of wrongdoings. So we can confirm that as agreement. We have an issue, or there is pushback from the group on the removal without cause. And the suggestion was that in such case, the cause needs to be explained. So there needs to be a rationale. You know, there doesn't necessarily have to be a wrongdoing, like fraud or other bad things, but the constituency needs to explain why they want to let go the board member. Nonetheless, we're not going to work on a list of allowable causes. So this is left up to the discretion of the designating organization. Then the community forum will be, and this is tagged remember because we already have that in our report, the community forum will be the place for a public discussion, including the opportunity for the board member to explain his or her view on the envisaged dismissal. And we also took, and maybe this was not very visible, but we thought that there was a lot of traction for a suggestion that the SOAC should go on record having tried to reconcile the difference with the board member before they invoke this power. You know, that's what you would usually do. If somebody does something wrong, you wouldn't instantly send a termination letter, but you would give that person a phone call and say, well, you better not do that again. And only if there is reason to believe that the differences can't be reconciled, then you would escalate to removal. And our suggestion is, in order to remove that tension, in order to increase the chances that there doesn't have to be a public discussion about director removal, that the organization that wants to remove needs to document attempts to reconcile differences. So is this something that reflects the support of the group? Ellen?
Yeah, thank you. Two comments. First of all, in terms of cause, as long as what we're saying is the cause doesn't have to be something which would, you know, you use the case of termination, of being a rationale for termination under the, you know, California courts or something. The cause may well just be that the director has radically different views on issues than the ACRSO.
That doesn't say anything different.
Okay, that's confirmation. The second thing is something I haven't brought up before, but as you were reading it, it dawned on me. There could well be cases where if the director is approached, they may not want a public hearing. They may want to quietly resign. and we should allow that to happen. Thank you.
I think that's a theoretical question because the director can resign at any time and thereby avoid that public hearing. But for transparency reasons, I think we can't have both.
Touche. You know, you're right. If they're approached privately, they may choose to resign before any public statement is made. Yes, agreed.
Okay, there is a queue forming, and let me just caution that we shouldn't have repeated discussions on the same things. We're trying to take stock. So if you are okay with what's on the screen, that's fine. Let's confirm this. Let's not try to come up with new proposals at this stage. We can do that later. We can still refine. But we would really like to capture the essence of what we agreed on or what we think we've agreed on yesterday. So I'd like to close the queue after Sean, and Cavus is next. Cavus?
Yes, but the text on the board does not reflect the discussion. Discussion yesterday was removal should be by the community, but not by the designator. It is not captured. So please capture that. If you have agreement by the community, so far so good. If not, this does not reflect the discussion. We come back to the point that designator will remove. No, community will remove. We have discussed that for hours.
Well, yes, some have made that point repeatedly. That does not mean that the majority of the stakeholders represented in the CWG see it that way. We are trying to determine whether there is consensus on a certain proposal, and we sense that most of the groups represented in the CCWG think that this is the way things should proceed. I note that you, Sean, and also Shireen have asked for something different, but that would still be rough consensus. But we're discussing this now in order to confirm whether there's agreement in the room. So next is Robin, please.
Thank you, Thomas. This is Robin Gross for the record. Yes, I just wanted to say I think this is a really good path forward on this issue of removing individual directors. I know we did have a lot of some different views on it, but I think this is a nice compromise that can address some of the concerns that we'd heard from allowing too liberal of a removal process. But I think having the cause be explained and the opportunity for the discussion and to reconcile, I think that this is an excellent path forward on this issue. Thank you.
Thanks, Robin. Greg?
Thanks. Greg Chatton for the record. Apologies if I'm reading this too much like a lawyer, but I can't help myself. The first sentence there... About
I can help you help yourself, so we can just move to the next speaker.
Oh, no, no. My concern is they're talking about it saying if there is cause. For cause ends up being a rather high degree of under U.S. law, the term cause generally has a lot of very negative implications about what is required to be a for cause removal. I think all that we should be required to do is give reasons, which a rationale is another good word. So we should stay away from the word cause because that traps us with a legal interpretation that at least I think we never agreed on. So this is, I think, is just an accident of language, but the problem is that language leads you down path, so we don't think we're going there.
Yes. I think on the first bullet point, we wanted to say cause because there is unanimity, I think. I haven't heard anyone say that there shouldn't be director removal if there is cause. But you're referring to the second bullet point, and we should say require reason to be explained. So thanks for that.
Yes, correct.
Sean?
Yeah, this is Sean for the record. I think I'm just going to be repeating what Cavu said. I really don't get the idea of if it's rough consensus, then it means that it should be on that page, on the list. Since we have achieved some level of, we're taking stock here, we're taking stock of what has been discussed in the last 2 days. So if you, the co-chair, feels that there is enough consensus on that particular point, then add it. I don't see why we shouldn't add it to the list. That's my point. I don't want to repeat all other justifications for the need to have the entire community involved in the removal of individual board member. I think it should be on the list. Thank you.
So, Sean, just a point of clarification. So you're asking for us to clarify that we had rough consensus on this rather than full consensus? I'm not sure I understand your request. I'm sorry.
My request is that right now you've not put in the point which was raised that before a removal of individual board director can be complete, it must receive a significant amount of approval from the community beyond the appointing SO or AC. We haven't reflected that on the list.
Exactly. That I tried to explain that. Sorry, Sean, for not having been clear enough. The way we go about with this is, you know, we need consensus on the whole package at the end of the day. But before we do that, we are trying to establish the level of support for individual ideas of our package of recommendations. And whenever there is broad support for a suggestion, we would confirm the support and keep it for our end product, if you wish. And we check whether there's broad support by asking people whether they don't like it. And for this particular item, what we see at the moment is that Cavus doesn't like it, Shireen, and yourself. But still, that would be rough consensus by the whole group. So we've addressed a lot of concerns that have been there. So Tijani had a concern with this, which I think we have addressed. And we would like to establish the atmosphere of the group, put that in writing, and then move on. But that doesn't mean, you know, that you will not see the language on that anymore. So we will establish whether there is consensus on that when we finalize the report. Next in line is Ellen.
Thank you. I just guess I want to register surprise. We're here at the second day of a meeting that was primarily billed to review public comments, and all we're doing is gauging the sense of the room without any input as to what the public comment said on this relatively crucial issue. So I'm a little worried about how we're going to get to closure on this whole thing if we're not considering the public comments in trying to come to closure now. Thank you.
Just in response to that, while we were discussing yesterday, certainly the inspection by subteams will take place. But I mentioned to you that we have Bernie, who has populated the public comment tool, to check while we were discussing whether we had brought on the table the concerns that had been raised by commenters. So I'm quite confident that although we don't have the written report of the public comment analysis done, that for the items that we discussed, we pretty much captured what the concerns from the community were. And this is why, you know, he's calling me Thomas the Brave at times. This is why I have been brave enough to ask for your support on this one. Mark is next.
Yes, thank you, Thomas. I just wanted to come in support of the point made by Cavus, and I registered my support yesterday, and this is an issue Sean has raised too, and this point about directors serving the community from their position on the board, and so it should be for the community to decide their fate, if you like. I think it's an important one, but I may have misunderstood, because I see the third bullet there, remember community forum role, that provides the opportunity for all SOs and ACs to make their views known and to endorse possibly recommendations for removal of individual members. Am I reading too much into that third bullet as serving to take account of the views that we've just been raising, Cavus and I and Sean? Thank you.
Thanks very much, Mark. Tijani?
Thank you, Thomas. I am really sorry. I hate to repeat, but I am obliged to repeat again. There is not only three or four persons who are for the community to take this decision. There is a lot of people. I am one of them. And I said that the forum was a way perhaps to make it lighter, to perhaps arrange more or less things. But their position are right for me. So we cannot say that there is a consensus among the group. There is people who are with, people who are not with. Thank you.
Thanks. Sean, I'm about to take this off the list of consensus items because I think we can't afford to have a full-blown discussion on that now after we had it yesterday. Let's please remove this. So obviously we can't take stock on that. Let's move to the next slide, please. So we seem or we sense that there is agreement on the incorporation of the AOC reviews into the bylaws. Is there any objection to stating that at this stage? So thank you for that. That was quick. Next slide, please. Community forum. This is just to recap that further work is to be done on that, but we have some ideas on the operations, on the composition, standing or not, etc. So this, just to confirm that these are the areas that the sub-team will have to do further work on. I guess that, you know, we can't say much more to that at this stage. Next slide, please. Human rights. There's the agreement that this is a workstream one item. Deadline for approval is in Dublin. So we should have the text available early October. And the lawyers are tasked with refining or drafting language to the requirements of the work party. So this is showing a clear path on how we're going to deal with this. So let's just check whether there's any objection to this approach, which I don't see. So we can move to the next slide, please. That is SOAC accountability. So we have collected the items, the excellent ideas that have been brought forward during yesterday's discussion. And that is, I'm just going to read it out for you. CCWG's second report recommends that the scope of regular SOAC reviews is extended to exclude accountability, external studies, and board supervision. So this is to ensure that we have constant improvement there. Then accountability is to those who participate, plus to those who they should represent. We extend the IRP scope to include the challenge of community mechanism decision-making due process being followed in the SO and AC, and set up a conflict of interest inspector office to investigate and assess breaches of conflict of interest, which is to be further studied. Because there was the issue, as you will remember, that I think it was Chris who said yesterday that a situation is unacceptable where those being held to account, being held accountable, are held accountable by those that don't follow comparable rules. So we should have conflict of interest rules in the community as well. Use same removal processes for councillors in SOAC as is proposed for the board. So I see Greg's hand is up. Couldn't resist for a second time.
Thanks, and you're going at such a breakneck speed that I'm actually commenting on the previous item on human rights, and clarify that we're not just talking about the text of a bylaw, but about the underlying rationale as being a package of what would be required to satisfy the Workstream 1 requirement. So that needs to be clarified. That was unclear in your statement. I also see a broader issue saying that the deadline for approval of Workstream 1 is in Dublin. I'm looking forward to our stock-taking and our discussion of timeline, because I can't imagine what we're approving in Dublin.
I guess the plan is for us to, and the language here might be misleading or is misleading. We want to discuss the major pillars of our report with the stakeholders in Dublin. And in order to prepare for that discussion, we need to have some proposals from the human rights sub-team. So this does not mean approval by the chartering organizations. I think we are in agreement that that is not feasible, but we are looking for having language that can be presented to the community in the engagement session. So we will add for clarification purposes that not only the bylaw language but also the rationale shall be provided. That was our understanding on this point anyway, just for clarification. I see Brett's hand is up.
This is actually just a clarification. If you could make sure that the board has fully walked back its comment recommendation to that the human rights language was premature. They said earlier, I know that was the implication of some of the comments earlier today, but then they came back after lunch and they said that they fully backed the comment in a unanimous fashion. So I just want to get clarification.
I think that it seemed to me that it was very clear when we discussed the issue in the morning, and I think that there has been already some clarification on what it was not meant to be interpreted of Steve's statement. So I think that we can assure that we have support on or by the board on including human rights as workstream one and not considering it as something premature. Am I right? Can we confirm that? Yeah, it's confirmed.
Next is Avery.
Thank you. Avery speaking, and I apologize for having raised my hand. I was so grateful when this went by without needing to discuss it. Further at this point, I'm a little concerned about Greg's addition, because what happens, I mean, yes, a confirming background note of saying why we need this in the bylaws for WS1 is perfectly fine. But what happens in this discussion is there's mission creep on that particular goal that demands us to understand all the implications and everything about this that is the WS2 or ATRT 3 through N work that has yet to be talked about. So I'm very concerned that every time this, all the rationalizations for this need to be put in, that we're taking on a indefinitely large basket of work. And so if the rationalization note is simply an explanation of why we need to have this in the bylaws, that makes a lot of sense. But if it's supposed to delve into the deep aspects of this issue, then I find that problematic. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Irene. As we have discussed in Working Party 4, I wouldn't expect this to be a 300-page report, but rather a very short explanation of why we consider this needs to be put into the bylaws, and maybe a couple of guidelines on how to interpret for future events. But yes, definitely, it wouldn't be a 300-page report, not at all.
Thanks very much. Let's then move to Eric.
Thank you very much. Would you clarify, please, that the WP refers to WP4, or does it refer to something else? Thank you.
Yes, we can confirm that. Good. Then let's move to the next slide. So I didn't hear any objection to that. Let's move to what I think is the last slide. This is the last slide, actually. Good. So this is what we've been able to take stock on. So can we please bring up the three columns with the areas of support? support concerns and for the work to be done? No, that's the...
We put slide number 4 and then number 5. So this is how we started our meeting yesterday. We had identified some areas of consensus that are on the left-hand side column, and we had identified existence of fundamental bylaws as having broad consensus, core values, balancing requirement, principles of binding IRP and standing panel and exclusions for CCTLDs, principle of 5 community powers, the affirmation of commitments reviews under 5-year frequency, jurisdiction in version 2 and not focused on ICANN headquarters, the standard bylaw change, the existence of a community forum, the request for reconsideration enhancements, and staff, SOAC accountability enhancements. I'm sorry, those red are actually some updates. So I just spoiled the feature. So it was a spoiler. So then we had the key difference that we had to bridge. Those were the model, the voting scheme, the budget veto, the stress test 18, and bylaw changes. Other issues were contract enforcement. We had SOAC accountability enhancements. We had human rights as part of Workstream 1. We had board of director removal for cause but not limited set of causes. We had the strategic plan veto right. We had contract enforcement capabilities, scope, standard review, timeline, cost of for IRP. We also had support of AOC reviews by consensus, process for fundamental bylaw changes, and Workstream 2 or ATRT2. Can we have the next slide, please? Where are we now? Where are we standing today, or at least we think where we're standing today? Well, we added some items to the left-hand column. We added SOAC accountability enhancements. We added human rights as part of Workstream 1. We now have consensus on that. We added board director removal for cause, but not limited set of causes. We added the strategic plan veto right to the consensus. In process, instead of gaps that need to be bridged, because we believe that we are already bridging those gaps with the different discussions we held these 2 days. So now we're having processed the model. And one thing I'd like to highlight is that one very important step that I believe we took in these 2 days is to finally get rid of the discussion on models, but instead focus on requirements. And that I think that that was a major step we achieved as a community, as a group, and I think that this will allow us to find a way forward. The voting scheme is also in process. We had very fruitful discussions in the breakout sessions. The budget veto, the stress test 18, I think that there were some very important clarifications, but the stress test team. I think Steve Del Bianco made very important remarks with regards to stress 18. And finally, operational issues, as opposed to other issues, as we had in our first slide. And we refer to this as operational issues because we believe they are, in fact, operational. And as long as we can agree, of course, on the left-hand side column and the center column, the operational issues will of course be taken care of at some stage, but we are already or we could make progress very easily in that. So that would be the contract enforcement capabilities, the scope, standard review, timeline, and cost of IRP, the support of AOC reviews by consensus, the process for fundamental bylaw change, and work stream 2 or ATRT3. So this is how we see the picture after these 2 days. Yes, Jonathan?
Oh, this might be comparatively small, but I feel like it was in the original conversation yesterday and didn't make it here, which was the CCWG's recommendation that we shouldn't proceed with a new round prior to implementation of recommendations of the review teams, and that was an area in which the board disagreed as well. Am I wrong about that? I remember that coming up yesterday, but I don't see it here.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Sorry, my understanding is that one of the points of disagreement raised in the board's proposal is that we had suggested that a new round of new GTLD should wait until the implementation of recommendations from the review teams, and the board suggests we should not wait. You raised that yesterday, but I don't see it here now.
Okay, we might have omitted that, and we should fix it. Thank you. So I see a couple of hands in the AC room. I see Avery's hand is up. I see the Janice and Kevu's hand is up, but I'm not sure whether those are new hands. Avery, is that a new hand or an old hand? That's really old. Okay. So next I have Tijani. Is that a new hand or an old hand?
No, new one.
New
Thank
hand.
You.
Okay.
Yeah. We just, Tijani speaking, we just removed the removal of board members by the appointing SONDCs from the consensus.
Yes. Unfortunately, the slide was created before we removed that. So,
I don't see it.
So it's going back to in process. It's going back to in process. We will be amending that slide, yes. Thank you for pointing it out. Next is Kavus.
Yes, one of my points was settled by Tijani. The second one, where is the entire board recalled?
The entire board recall, it's missing in the columns, but I believe we could place it in the areas of consensus, because I do believe that we have broad consensus on actually removing the whole board. The point of refinement, the point that needs refinement, it's just the individual board recall. So I guess we would place it. And, of course, I ask for your comprehension that this was done in a very quick way, so we might, of course, be missing some points, but we will amend, and we will send the final version for the list so we can all be on the same page. Next in the queue is Fadi.
Yes. Thank you, Leon, and thank you, Thomas. This has been an incredible 2 days, and I stayed back mostly, but I think it's time, if I could, to express comments. First, I want to thank you because you have been remarkable chairs, and I especially today, Thomas, how you kicked the day for us, I appreciate very, very much. I do believe that we are close, but I do believe we also have some areas of concern. This middle column, for example, started 2 days ago by saying that we have major issues in that column. And now it says in process. I don't know what that means. Does it mean suddenly that this group of people, without the full community, has decided to move forward with these things, when in fact 90-plus comments did not indicate we have consensus on these issues? I therefore ask to show a slide that I have prepared with the board in the last few days, in which we attempted, in the best way we can, to show where actually we believe there is consensus. And this is not a belief based on our views. This is a belief based on reading all these comments multiple times, listening to you, reading everything you've done, and I believe that this slide will help us move forward. So if I have your permission, I'd like to show that slide.
Thanks for the offer. I guess that this is what the group thinks is the current level of support. The board may have its own view on the analysis of public comments, but that's actually for the working group to decide. So I think we should be very cautious not to have competing views or versions or assessments of consensus and share them. So I recommend that you take the slide and send it to the list for everybody's review.
I'm not
we've
on the
walked
list.
Through the, we've walked through all these the areas of improvement. We've asked the group to chime in. Shireen did so. But I would caution us from, you know, presenting to the outside community the impression that we're now discussing the board's determination of consensus, which is obviously a task for the co-chairs.
Could I respond? If I could. This is not the board's view. This is, I'm presenting to you a view based on the staff's incredible work to understand your community's and my community's comments. And I believe that it is important everyone hears that as well. So simply saying that we suddenly move the model back to in process, when, frankly, I don't know what that means. Most of us don't understand what that means. I'm frankly, with all due respect, I'm not going to be steamrolled into this. I think we have to stop and understand exactly where the community, not the people who came to LA, have consensus. Based on
but
a tremendous amount of comments that were received.
Sorry, Fadi, this is something that's not for the board nor for staff to decide. I'm more than happy to hear other views
from
this group.
So I'm speaking as an individual. How is that?
We have made very clear that our process is that the group, and in particular subteams, will do the analysis of public comments. And we should await that. We have this assessment on the table, which has been crafted with the assistance of the group. I don't see any benefit in hearing the board's assessment of the consensus level.
I'm not speaking for the board. I'm telling you I'm speaking personally, and you're not allowing me to even share where I think our views are. I don't know what
you
is,
said
what
that you want to present the assessment of consensus as you did it together with the
based on all the comments our community have filed, which we have spent 2 days
but
and have not analyzed.
That's for the working group to be done.
And can we share them with the list?
You can share them with the list. Please do. Please do. We have a queue forming. I would not want
yes.
to spend too much time on this.
I noticed that Fiona was raising her hand, although she is not in the queue. So if those who have patiently waited in the queue, I mean, is this an immediate reaction to what Fadi said, Fiona? Could you please...
I think, truth be told, most of us had thought that we'd go through the public comments during this meeting. It hasn't happened.
We've not gone through all.
We've looked at just a few from the GAC and from the board. There are a lot of other comments that we need to look at. So we are leaving the meeting, going back to probably what we should have done before we came in for this meeting, having a summary of public comments so that then we can be very clear on our way forward. In the absence of that, and in view of the fact that we are not going to give Fadi the chance to share what he has managed to put together, I propose we get away with the column in process. Can we delete that? Because we don't have a consensus on that.
But that's exactly what that column means, is that we don't have consensus on that.
No. When we don't have consensus, it is there is no consensus. It is not in process. The chairs have decided to put something in process that we have not agreed to have in process. Can we have that column deleted?
Yeah, we can strike that that title in process and say clearly that there is no consensus.
It was meant to say work in progress.
Exactly. Okay, we can clearly signal as no consensus. So, staff, can you please make sure we do amend that column with the title that says no consensus? Going back to the queue, I had Sebastian Bachelet.
Yes, thank you. Difficult to intervene now, but I have two feelings. The first one is that... I remain outside of the consensus on some items who are on the consensus, and as it's needed to be said, but I have difficulty to understand when you close the queue and at the same time you ask you need to have all the ones who disagree to say it. That's a little bit difficult. The second point is that I think really something is missing. It's who are supposed to be in work streams too, but it's very important. It's all the work about diversity. Then I don't know if these points here are all the points that we need to have consensus or no consensus, or it's just part of the report. And now I will try to do something difficult. It's that I understand your point of view, Thomas, and I, that it is a CCWG meeting. But in the same time, we as a group, we can't stay without, or we can't say to someone who is offering to have inputs to the discussion not to do it. And I know how it's painful for the working group, but I think it's as much as painful for the people who have made some work and who want to share with us. Then I would like to ask you humbly that you allow anyone to share their work, their thought, and we will be in better position to work. It's something important in this organization. We are adults, and if we don't like what we hear, we can say it, we can still disagree with. I show you that I still disagree with some point made during this meeting, but we can't avoid to have the inputs made by everybody. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sebastian. Next on the queue, I have Asha.
Thank you, Leon. Asha Hemrajani, for the record. I have two questions for clarification. The first question is about the SOAC accountability enhancements. You have it under the column for consensus. May I ask, was there any time, which work stream is this referring to? And shall I go with my second question, or you want to answer that first?
So the question is with respect to work stream 2 or ATRT3?
No, I'm referring to SOAC on accountability enhancements. The one that's currently under the consensus column at the bottom, the red. Is there any time frame specified for that, work stream 1 or work stream 2? When you say consensus, is that consensus that this item will be put into work stream 1 or work stream 2?
Yes, okay. What we have discussed in the particular working group with regards to SOAC accountability is that we would be stating as part of work stream 1, the commitment to actually have these SOAC accountability enhancements done. We have already proposed some enhancements in our report, and it would, of course, need to be completely fleshed out as part of work stream 2. So it's a two-step process.
Oh, okay. All right, then. So I would suggest, if possible, to write that it's both. That is the two-stream process in here for clarification, because it was unclear to me. The second question I had was about the, as we've all discussed many times today, not all the public comments have been considered by the CCWG. So is there a clear plan that this sheet will be updated after the analysis of the all the public comments has been done?
Yes, of course this will be updated. This is not set in stone, so
okay.
Consider it a work in progress. I mean, it's all work in progress.
Okay, so then could I request or suggest that we have something on the title line to indicate that?
Yes, we can.
Okay, thank you.
No problem. So next on the queue, I have Keith Drazik.
So, thank you, Leon. Keith Drazik. My hand is up actually for the next part of our agenda, the road to Dublin. So if there are other comments on this slide and this section, I'll take my hand down.
you, Geek. So next I have Kubus.
Yes, first of all, please change the title above that table. It's not the area of consensus. It's the status of the issues discussed.
That is right. That is right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Number one. Number two, some people were emotional today. We should respect the colleagues with full respect. We should not attack the people. We should allow the people to openly, clearly express their views. I know Thomas may be very tired today, but all of us tired, and we should be up to the end, maintain the environment and atmosphere of friendship and mutual respect to each other. This is not acceptable. In particular, with respect to his reaction with Fadi Shahadi, is not acceptable to me.
Okay, I feel compelled to respond to that one briefly. We have presented this slide of the different areas of work earlier. We said we would get back to this at the end of the meeting. So it was very clear that we would go through this exercise with the whole group. We asked after every slide whether people in the room had observations for that to make. So it is unclear to me why we would now show a separate slide with the same points where there was the opportunity to speak to all of those at an earlier stage. You know, we could all have our personal versions of this. So I see limited sense now, after all this time that we spent together, in the duplication of efforts. I have invited Fadi to send that to the list. I have just in writing asked him whether he agrees to presenting to the group during next week's call. So this is not off the table, but I think what the issue is that this was prefaced by saying I have, together with staff, analyzed all the public comments, and we're now going to show you what the level of consensus in the community is. And this is an original task for the working group. And it's for the working group to agree or disagree with me. So this is not to suppress a personal view, but this is a proposal to keep us in line with our own processes, i.e. the consensus determination is for the working group to be done. And it doesn't help to get an individual, even if it's the CEO and president, version worked on with staff of what the consensus level in the community is.
Excuse me, your argument is valid, but your tone is not accepted. The tone you have used in replying to Fadi is not accepted.
I think we should just move on. We have. Let me directly ask Fadi, are you okay with presenting next Tuesday?
Whatever would serve our community. I was in very good faith trying to respond to the fact that your slide, which is now more correct than it was 10 minutes ago, that you are ready to move forward with, I don't think was a representation of where the community stands. We don't even have the community's input yet evaluated. And when we asked the room about some elements, people didn't feel there is an understanding. So this is all I was doing. I was trying to say, look, here's an assessment, and I'm fine. I have such deep respect for what you are enduring there, so there's no personal issue at all. And whatever I can do to help, I will help. What is more important, frankly, for all of us who have invested so much, especially you chairs, is for us to move towards solving all these things and closing these issues. And I want to bring up what IRA Magaziner said today as an opportunity for all of us to start working together immediately, starting tomorrow, to figure out how by Dublin we can have some solutions. I hope you will consider this, Mr. Chair, as a truly nothing but an opportunity to cooperate and collaborate and work together, not board versus chairs, no, community members together to solve this together. So I hope in that spirit we move forward. And no offense, no issue at all, I'm fine.
No, and we have a history of having an open exchange of thoughts. So I suggest, you know, there's a queue. The invitation for Fadi stands. to discuss this next Tuesday. I would really appreciate if we could go to the planning for Dublin or for the time between today and Dublin, if that's okay with you.
Okay, we, however, have a queue still to... I mean, if we can keep it brief, we would appreciate it, but I don't want to leave those who have patiently waited without speaking. So, Chris Despain was with his hand up, but suddenly disappeared. So, Chris, you were after Caboose.
Yeah.
Could
Sorry,
you please?
Thank you, Leon. And I'm conscious that you want to move on. Just in case it's helpful, and I don't say if any other helpful. This was the slide that Steve tried to put up earlier on today, and you asked him not to, and you did actually say we'll get to that later on this afternoon. So I think I've got no problem with the solution, but I certainly had an expectation when Steve put up that slide that would be gotten to this afternoon in this section. So I suspect that that's probably the basis that Fadi was working on. So just wanted to say that. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chris. Next is Wolfgang.
Thank you. You know, it's late on the day. We should not open new fields of conflict. And what I had in my eyes and in my ears and in my brain this afternoon was we start to realize we are sitting in one boat. And I think this is really important to recognize. And it was such a good start this morning when Thomas said, let's go beyond the MEM and this whole membership model. So we tried to find the best solution for the whole community, regardless whether it comes from the group or the board or another constituency or whatsoever. So, and if you remember exactly what Larry said yesterday and what Ira said this morning, this was a very good guideline. So we should forget about the, let's say, tense moments just a couple of minutes ago and should look forward. So I think there was a very good proposal by Ira and to say, you know, let's break this down in smaller groups and discuss more clearly how to move in a pre-Dublin process. And I think this is the challenge, you know. Let's forget about all this, who has said what. This is not helpful. So we are sitting in one boat. We want to achieve something. And we should not open new channels of conflict. This is destructive. The constructive tone was already here in the room the whole day. And we should build on this and not go to different avenues. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well, Wang, I think we're all on the same page. Next, I have Steve.
Thank you very much. So this is hard work. We've all been here. One thing that you're hearing in various forms is two sides of the same thing. The board is not in opposition. The board is not an adversary. At least that's our view. We are part of the community. We're here to help, and we want as much of a organized and a successful conclusion and improvements in the exact same things that everybody else wants here in accountability. That does not come through, frankly, and that's what you're hearing, neither in the basis for the group or the way we've been treated. It just adds to the burden of trying to get somewhere, because it's an unnecessary drag on this. We've operated in good faith. We'll continue to operate in good faith. And we are very empathetic, truly, on the difficulty that you as chairs and that the group as a whole has in trying to move this forward. There is no way to escape dealing with the substance. None of us have any way to escape that. And everybody is proceeding as best we can. And one way or another, we're going to grapple with all of that, however long it takes. We have heard multiple times from Larry Strickling, from Ira Magaziner, and others that there is a definite risk that if we are not able to wrestle this to the ground in a reasonable amount of time, that the whole thing may fall apart. None of us really want that at all. But as I said earlier, we have an obligation as a community to put something together that is an improvement over where we are. And that is a part of our mindset. I strongly support what Fadi has said, what Bruce has said, and indeed all of my colleagues. And so with that, I just want to urge that we take a deep breath, stay focused on what the goal structure is, and appreciate the challenge, not only intellectually on the objective issues, but also the challenge personally on stamina and on composure. I am as subject to that as anybody, and I appreciate the difficulties. But with that, I think we are fundamentally on the same side and are trying to achieve the same things. And so I counsel that we should have that as our attitude going forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Steve. I'm closing the queue after Matthew Bale. So next I have George Sadowski.
Thank you. I just want to say that I support the comments that my colleagues on the board have made. In the interest of time, I'll stop there.
Thank you, George. Mike?
Thank you, Chip. Maybe just one comment. I think, Thomas, specifically to your comment as to your exclusive right to call consensus, I think maybe you should qualify that. I think it's the chair's or co-chair's right to call consensus in the CCWG. I don't think it's the co-chair's right or prerogative to call consensus in the community more broadly. I think that's reserved to the chartering organizations. And I think that as directors, we have a fiduciary obligation to consider the views, not just of this working group. So please give us a little bit of leeway. We don't intend treading on your toes and interfering with your prerogative, but we are looking at what other people are saying, and I think that it's well within our prerogative to do that.
Mike, brief response, and I think we should really move on. But it is our duty as CCWG to analyze all the comments and see what level of support from the community we have. So I think it's a misstatement of our role to say that that we are not there to look at the community's views on what we're doing. It is a core task. And just to be very honest, it's more more a challenge and a burden rather than a privilege to be doing that. So if I had the opportunity to let somebody else do it, I'd gladly do so. Keith.
Thank you, Thomas. Thank you, Leon. This is Keith Drazik for the transcript. So just sort of trying to take stock over the last couple of days and look ahead to Dublin. I think I have 5 points, and I think it reflects some of the discussion that we've just had and some of the discussion of the last couple of days. I think we need to continue our review and assessment of all the public comments from the second public comment period. We're in the middle of a process here, and we have an established process that must be followed. And from the public comments received, including the boards, we need to identify the areas of our proposal that require additional work, including further explanation and or adjustment. It's pretty clear from what we've heard, what we've read, what we've seen, that adjustment is going to be required. So for the areas that require adjustment, we need to clarify and clearly show how the adjustments evolved from the public comments and the discussions. We need to show our work. This was clearly stated by Larry Strickling and NTIA, is that we have to document how we got to where we are and document where we're going. And this is going to be important to inform any follow-on proposal and public comment period. As part of that process, or in parallel, I think we should consider Ira Magaziner's proposal to delegate some follow-on solutioning work to smaller groups. The public comment response to our second proposal has shown there is a lot of work to be done, and as Ira and Larry both noted, time is getting short. I think we need to focus on delegating our work to groups that are prepared to focus and to deliver something in return for consideration by the CCWG. And I think finally, everyone must compromising our well-established goals. The community has been very clear from the beginning of this process through multiple public comment periods about the goals. And from my reading of the board's feedback and even the comments distributed to the list today, is that I think the goals, there's strong alignment on the goals. I think we just have to figure out how we get there. And I think we're getting closer. I think we actually did make a lot of progress over the last 2 days. Maybe not as much as we'd hoped, but that's the nature of the beast. And so, on the comment of compromising without compromising on our goals, that's going to be true for the board as much as it is for the CCWG and the community. We all have to recognize that compromise is going to be necessary. And if we go into the next several weeks, going into Dublin with that mindset, I'm confident we'll get to where we need to be. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Keith. Next, I have Matthew Bale. Matthew?
Thank you, Leon. This is Mathieu speaking. I haven't been speaking much during this meeting, and it's been quite a change compared to other CCWG meetings, obviously. And I will only speak to one point, which was the question that the offer, actually, that was made by Fadi about helping us in our way forward. And I think it's a good question to ask, what can the board or Fadi or staff or anyone do to help this group? Because obviously, as was stated by Steve Crocker, we are facing some difficulties. And that's the nature of the beast. So I think the first thing that can be done is provide our group with the appropriate room to breathe and do the work we are supposed to do, starting with a thorough analysis of the public comment, and of course, as well as organizing and delegating work so that we can proceed efficiently. And I'd like to stress that help is very welcome from the board members as well as Fadi individually or staff members in all work parties as individual contributors. But help is also welcome in reaffirming the process that was set up initially and the fact that the outcome of our work will be considered even if it's not in line with the view that the board has expressed as a stakeholder in the process and which was totally legitimate. I think we've seen a lot of blogs recently around the CCWG by many stakeholders. Probably this item would be a perfect topic for a future blog that would certainly reinforce the process. Another thing as well is certainly this is not the time for us to start duplicating work, whether it's analysis of comments or parallel processes of interactions and consultations. We need to streamline the process. We need to trust this process. And I think this is really the takeaway message that I'm taking from this meeting, is that we need to put the process first if we want to make sure we deliver quality results in the end. And finally, I want to express how grateful I am to all the group members, everyone in this room, for demonstrating their willingness to listen to the community input. And, of course, the board's input is a very valuable one, but I think you've heard a lot during this day, a number of people expressing concern that we're not going far enough in the community input analysis. I think that's probably the result of the way the meeting was organized, and that's just history now, and we need to look forward. I also want to share my empathy and support for Leon and Thomas. They have had this Herculean task to manage a very, very difficult meeting taking place, well, not exactly the way we were planning it to be. And they've been flexible. They've been listening to inputs from the room. And I am admiring their ability to keep this running in these conditions. And I wanted to put that on the record. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Matthew. We did miss you. And we do appreciate that you are hanging in with us at this late hour from Paris. So, as you will remember, I had closed the queue after Matthew, and we really do need to move on our road to Dublin. So, let's move on. Thomas?
Thanks very much, Leon. And I guess what we need to do now is flesh out as briefly as we can, because I know that drinks are waiting for us, what we're going to do between today and Dublin. So I think our priority number one is working on the analysis of public comments and writing up our report, drawing our conclusions, agree on improvements to the report. And in parallel, I would like to give maybe Keith the opportunity to flesh out again a little bit what your concrete suggestion on a sub-team was. I know that Ira had suggested we would form a group. I guess that's what you're picking up on. So maybe you can illustrate that a little bit more.
So, thank you, Thomas. So I think we heard Ira suggest that, if we were able to find some representatives from the community, the CCWG board and staff, the legal teams, depending on the topic, that we might be able to focus and drill down on specific issues and try to create solutions or suggested solutions that would then be brought back to the community or back to the CCWG for consideration. So I think if I heard it correctly, it was a suggestion to try to delegate some level of work and to focus and to, I guess, work a little bit more efficiently because of the time constraints that we're under. And I think he suggested that not all the work can be done by everybody in the time that we have. And I think that we ought to at least discuss that and consider it perhaps on our next call on Tuesday.
Thanks, Keith. Any more views on that topic? But let me just check. I'm not sure, Steve, is that a new hand? Chris, is that a new
just
hand?
Just to say that I, thank you, just to say
you,
that.
You left your hand up, right?
No, I put it back up again. I have the ability to move it up and down the list, just randomly. I just want to say that I think that Ira's idea was actually really sensible, and I think that how successful it can be is demonstrated by the way that the small groups operated in the breakout sessions over the last day. It seems to me that you could take a view that you can't set up a group that's got a board member on it because that will be the board influencing, or you can't set up. But it just seems to me to be nonsense. If you take a view that it's time to start widening the discussion, there can't possibly be anything wrong in trying to involve the wider SOs and AC chairs in this discussion. They're the ones that are going to, be talking about this in Dublin. And it just strikes me that having spent the morning with Greg Shatton and I basically spending a huge amount of time on the same page, both figuratively and literally, that it's demonstration that this would be a very sensible thing to do and that it's something that we should take advantage of as a really good suggestion. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Chris. I'd like to close the queue after Jonathan, and when you speak, can you please keep it brief? And maybe you can also speak to suggestions on how to operationalize this. Who should be on it? What should be the mandate? And so on and so forth. Next is Greg.
Thanks. Greg Shatton for the record. I think we can look to our sister group, the CWG, for some thoughts on how to operationalize this. We in that group came to a similar point in our work where we broke down into what we called drafting teams, which were A through M. So you had about, and maybe they went a little bit longer than that, 13, 14 teams, each of which took bite-sized chunks, really single topics, and were tasked with bringing them back to the whole group on a fairly short time frame, like a couple of weeks, for review. Some took a little longer to bring it back, but the idea of getting small groups working on discrete chunks really worked well, and that really was what helped us get over the hump in that group. And I think you can speak to your fellow chairs, get a sense of how we organize that out, but I really think that that provides a model for us to follow. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. Sean?
Yeah, thank you. This is Sean for the record. Thank you very much, co-chairs, for your leadership. I just want to mention that this meeting was supposed to be a very great advantage in that I look at the room and it looks like there's a lot of people in here, both physical and remote. I'm not sure we can get this kind of participation again before Buenos Aires. Dublin. So I think we lost that very unique opportunity to get a lot of contributions from this huge participation we are experiencing in this particular meeting. So that said, please, as we prepare to do something or fix this, let's all remember that some of us who will be participating remotely will not have as much resources or time to actually fully participate in this. That was the essence of actually coming here in the first place. So please put that in mind, and let's actually go for a solution that will be effective. And that's why I will support what has been suggested by Chris, that we should actually have a blend, a mix of these working groups of the different communities in the working groups, so that we can create a very, very direct and specific solution to the problem. We have been avoiding the obvious problems, issues, and I think we have to face it. If we don't face it now, we will never get anything done or presented in Dublin. So that's my view, and please, I hope you take it serious. Thank you.
Rest assured we take it seriously, Sean. Next is Caboose.
Yes, dear Chairman. First of all, I would like to express my sincere thanks to the ICANN staff, assisting us all the way through, before, after, during the meeting, and really highly appreciate it. Second, I would like to express also our thanks to the ICANN board, Steve Crocker and Fadi Shahadi, and all distinguished board members. They came here. They share the views with us. We are very grateful to ICANN to provide this very valuable document, which was really guiding us to have something, to have a conclusion which is more acceptable to the community. Distinguished Thomas, you, like us, is human beings. Sometimes we lose our temper. Sometimes we are under pressure. Perhaps Matthew is responsible for that, because if he was here, he would have really helped you to take part of this burden to you. You were three always. This time you were two. I know you were under pressure. We appreciate all your hard work. I have already admired you. I continue to admire you, and we would like to work together. We would like to maintain the environment of a friendship, respect, and good will with each other, and transparency, allowing the people to really and very openly discuss with each other. We are all equal. If you are on the chair and we are participants, we are equal. So we should be respected. We respect you. We need to respect us. I'm sure that you will do that. Let us maintain this group. This group, in my view, is a lovely group. They are working very, very well, very high experts, the group, except me, all of them, good lawyers and so on and so forth. We appreciate, and I learned a lot from all of you, and I hope that we continue to learn from each other. Thank you very much, Thomas.
Thanks very much, Caboose. You stole my thunder on a couple of points, but I'm going to repeat those points anyway at the end of the session. Just when you say that you think I've lost my Tempa, I think you said. I didn't. Rest assured, I didn't. And,
in tone, but not in face. In tone, yes.
Well,
I'm spending 41 years. I know who is doing what.
Rest assured, I think I should make one thing clear, because there has been a lot of back and forth on this particular point. This was by no means meant to suppress Fadi's views. The issue was with the presentation of what the community said in its comments. So I'm interested in preserving the integrity of the process. That is all. And I would have said that to anyone else in the room coming up with the same suggestion. And I'm more than happy to explain this over a wine or over a beer when we meet. I'm sure that I will talk to Fadi again. So there are no hard feelings, at least from my side, and Fadi has confirmed that as well. Avri.
Thank you. Avri speaking. After that, I'm almost tempted to try and make you lose your temper, because I'd really like to see how...
Try me.
I'll work on it. Now, the point I wanted to speak on was referring back to Ira's talk. And first of all, I wanted to point out that we've been using that technique. Maybe we have been cutting and slicing differently than the CWG did, but we've had so many little groups. And when it was necessary to talk about human rights, we built another little group, and we reached out to the community. And they joined the CCWG and filled out all those SOI forms and were brought in. So doing it in little groups is not new. Perhaps the A through N methodology that CWD used was easier to understand than the W1 through 4 with all the little subgroups. We've been doing it. So now, the issue I had with the issue I had with Ara Magaziner's recommendation, though, is he seemed to be recommending that some small group of bosses go off and make the decisions and bring them back to us. Now, it's quite possibly I misunderstood him. I hope not. We're both Rhode Islanders, so I always cheer for them and hope I understand them. But really, that notion I would have problems with, of a few leaders going off and then coming and telling us this is what we've decided. I think we're already doing the slice and dice in the little groups, and we should keep doing it. And someday I'm going to make you lose your patience.
You know, Fadi, for the remote participants, Fadi kindly brought us a beer, a Mexican beer for Leon, Stella Artois for myself, and I'm not sure whether that was actually a good idea, because if you give a German a beer, he can work for another couple of hours. So, cheers.
He'll be doing it on his own, of course, but...
To Avery's point, I think you're perfectly correct in saying that the idea of having sub-teams working is not revolutionary. I think we need to be very cautious not to make such an idea look like there's a small negotiation team that does the deal. The way I understood it, and I think there's a lot of benefit in that, is to ensure that the different SOs and ACs, as we progress towards consensus, do not work on subjects that would cross red lines, or that where we can see that, you know, obviously there's no way for us to reach consensus. So I would rather see this as a consultation effort, with the work still being done by the CCWG, but the groups talking to each other more closely, maybe with the support from lawyers from all sides, to ensure that we increase our chances of success before we submit to the chartering organization. Jonathan.
Thank you. I guess I'd like to add my thanks to the chairs for doing a great job of managing a meeting that's had to change its focus many times over the course of 2 days, and I certainly didn't feel like you did anything that was untoward or rude in any way. My understanding of our original plan for the meeting, however, was that we were going to try to identify the issues that were raised specifically with the CCWG proposal and see if we could address them and therefore make modifications to our proposal that address the concerns that were raised in the public comments, including the board's, and with those modifications be able to move forward to a final recommendation somewhere down the road. Through various messages, the message we seem to have received from the board, and not to single the board out, is that there are no circumstances under which the board would advance a proposal that involved a membership model. That's my understanding. So just so we're all talking about the spirit of cooperation, my understanding is the board has stated clearly that there are no circumstances, regardless of what efforts we make to address the concerns that are raised, that they will advance a membership model. So if that's true, that's fine in a way, right? It makes it tougher to paint the board as a victim in this process, but if that's the truth, that's good to know. But if we are going to support, we are going to change the underlying model that we have put out for public comment, my question is one of process. Are we going to need to go back to public comment with a new model?
I think, Jonathan, that's not a question for us to answer today. Let me try to respond to that in a more general fashion. First of all, as I said previously, we are going to analyze comments and we're going to work towards a solution that reaches consensus in the whole community. Whether or not we need to go back to public comment depends on how fundamental the changes to our recommendations are. I would consider, you know, this is a preliminary judgment, that if we change the legal vehicle for community powers to be exercised, then we would need to go to have another public comment period. But I think we're not yet there. I think we all met here to be open-spirited to whatever solutions are best for the organization, supported by the community. I think, I think I've said this on a couple of occasions, I could sit with each and every one of you, and we could come up with as many solutions as there are sub-teams, and all of those would probably be robust and solid. The community doesn't always come up with the most beautiful solution, but we've been tasked with a bottom-up made consensus solution. And I stick to that, and this is, again, why I'm saying I'm interested in the integrity of the process. And therefore, let's analyze comments first. Let's see where common ground is. Let's see that we address concerns. And after that, we're going to make a decision as to what the carrying model should be. Kusai, the queue is still adding up. So after Chris, we really need to stop. Kusai.
Thank you, Chair. Let me commend you and your colleague on the management of this, on the effort of managing this meeting. And thank you for your effort. I would like also to thank the team and the CCWG and preparing the second draft report, and it's a huge effort. But the report is so much detail, so wide in topic, that it triggered many public comments, many views, issues on consensus, issues in the process, issues that doesn't have consensus. I have a suggestion that we take this report in stages or phases rather than one shot, focusing first on the issues that is related directly to the IANA transition itself. Issues like the IANA operation, the service level, the funding or the budgeting of the IANA. Maybe that will help us within the time constraint that we have from here to Dublin. Maybe that will simplify the work of the smaller work groups, rather than dealing with such a wide report that some aspects of it relate strictly to the ICANN operation itself. Some of it are indirectly related to the IANA transition, and some of it directly related. So my suggestion is to focus, to take it in stages or phases, and to focus first on the issues that is related directly to the IANA transition. It's just a suggestion.
Thanks, Kusai. Next is Avery. Chris, how do you manage to get the last word out of the
I don't know. I told you I can move myself up and down. Just a question for you, actually, and if you've already covered it, I apologize. On the subject of the road to Dublin, you gave the impression in the last CCWG call that I was on, which I think was the penultimate one before this meeting, that you were clear that we weren't going to have a
final report for Dublin. Is that still, are we still clear that that's the case?
If there's anyone in the group thinking that we can reach consensus on a model without having agreement on the legal vehicle for it, speak up. I think it's unrealistic, and that's been proven in the various communications.
So may I then respectfully suggest that it might be a sensible thing to do for you to tell the chairs of the SOs and ACs that they should not expect to see a final report before Dublin, because they might need to adjust what they will be doing in Dublin, because I think that's what they were told to expect. So just a suggestion for you.
Yes, and that's a very good one. I think we've tried to channel this information to a lot of channels already. I think our expectation would actually be to have the fundamental issues resolved by then and discuss them with the community so that we will be able to come up with a consolidated final report a few weeks later. So with that, I think we should end this meeting. I will be repetitive of what Cavus has said in part, so let me thank ICANN staff for their awesome support. I think and a specific shout out to Nancy. She gave us a room with daylight. We had daylight. Thank you to the technical people who made it possible for us in the room as well as remotely to understand each other. Thank you to the Xplain guys who always come up with these great visualizations of what we're doing. Thanks to the remote participants. It's such a challenge to stay on and concentrated for so many hours. You're awesome, guys. Thanks to everyone in the room. I won't give special credit to the board because we said we are one, so it's this group in this room. We have another challenge in front of us. Thank you for all of your dedication. Thanks to the lawyers that have helped us a great deal. Thanks to the rapporteurs and sub-team chairs who have, they're doing all the hard work. We're just taking the credit for it. Mathieu has been great. Remotely, Leon has been great. And I thank you all for your dedication. Bye-bye.
And, of course, thank you to Thomas as well.
So,
don't everybody clap at once. Consensus at least in one thing.
Well, I wanted to do it this time around again, but.